Greg McBride is a regular guest here, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Analyst over at Bankrate. You can read their stuff at bankrate.com. I see that you all did a sort of who are the winners and losers after the Fed interest rate hike. How about if I just call out the categories and you tell me who wins and who loses? All right, Greg?
Sounds like a plan, John.
Although before we just do that, what's your reaction to the market's reaction today? We're going to hit 1,000 at the rate we're going.
Well, all year long, market has not liked a Fed that is raising interest rates. And all year long, we kind of had these, the market would have a brief rally on this expectation that the Fed is going to wimp out or that they're going to pivot. And, every time Jerome Powell pushes back. And he did that again yesterday, by saying that they're going to continue to raise rates and into 2023. And I think today you're certainly seeing the market reaction to, once again, Powell kind of sticking to the same message he has been and dashing the hopes of investors that, are looking forward to the day that the Fed moves to the sidelines.
So coming down 25 basis points from the previous increases was evidently already baked into where the markets were. It's what he said about what's going to happen next that's caused us to give up 1,000 points since.
Yeah, well, what they did yesterday also was they released their quarterly economic projections. And the last time they had done that prior was in September. Well, a lot changed since September, and in particular, their own projections of where they think interest rates are going to go, those new projections now indicate that they're going to have to push rates above 5%. And that's not what investors wanted to hear. And so I think, today, after investors have had a little time to sleep on it, as we've seen in meetings past, that once investors have a chance to sleep on it, they come back the next day and hit the sell button.
Yeah, what we're going to go from 4.6 to 5.1 or 4.5 to 5.5? Is that what, or to 5? Is that what I heard or saw?
The median projection was increased from 4.6 in September to 5.1 at this most recent release of that. So, that indicates that after the Fed pushed rates up to 4.5 yesterday, that there's three more rate hikes still coming in 2023, and that's three more than investors were hoping for.
And therefore, it's more expensive to borrow money, and therefore businesses will have either increased costs or they'll produce less. The businesses will be less profitable, and that'll hurt the markets, and so the markets are down today. Savings accounts and CDs, who wins, who loses as a result of this?
Well, this has been a real area where we've seen significant improvement. At the beginning of the year, the top yielding savings accounts were barely earning a little more than half of 1%. They're now north of 4%. They're still rising. Your emergency savings, it's doing a lot better if you have it in the right place. Make sure you're looking for those online savings accounts. If you're just sitting pat at the same bank you've always been at, you're probably not seeing that same kind of improvement. And, so it's really important to get out there and find where your savings is going to be welcomed with open arms and higher returns.
Mortgages.
Mortgage rates, they're still double what they were at the beginning of the year, but they've at least come off the peak that we had seen in October. Mortgage rates that had crested above 7% back in October, now down about 6 to about 6.5%. I think the outlook for 2023 is a little bit better in the sense that a weaker economy and lower inflation does bode for lower mortgage rates. But if you have a weak economic backdrop, that doesn't exactly give would-be homebuyers the confidence that they need to go out and buy homes. So yes, rates might be down a little bit, but not sure that changes the fortunes of home sales or refinancing in any measurable way.
I'll give you one more category, though you consider a half a dozen in your article, credit cards.
Yeah, credit card rates are already at a record high. The Fed raised rates half a percentage point yesterday. That means by the time your January statement comes with all those holiday purchases on it, your rate's going to be half a percentage point higher. And the Fed is still raising rates. So if you're carrying a balance and you're carrying it at these progressively higher rates, that's really hurting. If you've got good credit, look for a low rate balance transfer offer and really focus on getting that debt paid off. If you grab a 0% balance transfer offer for the next 21 months, you can really turbocharge the efforts to get that debt paid off once and for all.
Greg McBride, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Analyst, Bankrate. Hey, thanks, Greg. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, John. Happy holidays.
You too. Lisa Edidicchio is Edichico. Oh, shoot. I didn't want to get it wrong. Senior editor at CNET. This is the first time you and I have visited. Lisa, thank you for joining us. Apologies for messing up your name.
Yeah, of course. No problem at all. Believe me, it happens a lot. But thank you so much for having me today.
It sounds just like it looks if I would just pause to look at the letters. Edichico, right?
Yes. Yep. That's it.
What kind of nationality is that?
Italian.
I guess so. So let's just talk a little bit about a couple of stories that you all have been promoting. Meta is launching and testing some new features for Instagram users. Tell me what's happening there.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, there are some new features coming to Instagram. And what I find most interesting here is that one of these features called Instagram Notes is kind of coming at a time when people might be looking for some alternatives to Twitter. And Instagram Notes, just as the name implies, it lets you post short notes to people that follow you, that you also follow back, or to your close friends group. And those messages, I think they have a 60-character limit, and they appear for 24 hours, and then they disappear. So it's interesting because, you know, we think of Instagram as being a place for sharing visuals and photos and videos and things like that, of course. But now it seems like there is more of an interest in kind of sharing short text-based posts as well to followers.
Would they be doing this, and would these other companies be going after Twitter the way they are, even if Elon Musk had not taken it over?
That's a good question. You know, I don't know if that would actually be the case. And with Meta, it's interesting because Meta does kind of have a history of, you know, looking at what's working in the market and kind of replicating it in their own way. I mean, we've seen that with Snapchat. We've seen that with TikTok, of course, and now we're starting to see that with Be Real a little bit as well. But as it relates to Twitter, you know, I don't know if that many social media companies like Meta would really be trying to imitate Twitter because, you know, it has kind of, even though it's widely popular, it is kind of a niche product. I feel like most people who use it are in the media industry or the tech industry, and it hasn't really kind of exploded in revenue and scale in the way that some of these other apps have, especially when it comes to resonating with the younger generation.
Oh, no kidding. Really? Twitter is not popularly used by younger people?
You know, I don't have the actual statistics in front of me to really back that up. But from what we've seen in previous data that I've seen over the years is that really it's YouTube, TikTok, Instagram somewhat, but yeah. YouTube and TikTok are really the big ones with like the Gen Z generation.
Well, Elon Musk is an outlier. So maybe what he does, which sounds atypical, should not necessarily mean that it's not going to be successful. But this business model of saying and doing outrageous things and trying to become the most unpopular person in the world would strike me as a bad business strategy that he's been embarking on of late. Some of the things that he's been posting are just as nutty as anything he's ever done. And now he's increasing the character limit on Twitter as well, right?
Yeah, so, you know, like you mentioned, you know, Elon Musk does have a track record of being behind some of the most successful tech companies out there, like, you know, Tesla, SpaceX, even PayPal. But yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they always say there's one thing that the market hates, and that's unpredictability. So I think that's kind of where a lot of that fear kind of comes from, is that, you know, he's been unpredictable so far. And I think, you know, that makes it hard to know exactly what's in the cards for Twitter when it comes to its future.
They're going to increase the limit, or might, to 4,000 characters rather than 280? Wow. That doesn't sound like Twitter, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, Twitter has always been known for having those really short, concise, compact, you know, posts that you would share that make it pretty different from a lot of the other platforms out there. So that would certainly be a change.
What's the Flipboard story then relative to Twitter?
Yeah, so Flipboard, is, for those who aren't familiar, it's kind of a newsreader app. It aggregates stories from around the web based on your interests. And, you know, it's really a place where people go to consume content rather than create it. But now Flipboard is also launching some features that are, you know, actually let you create posts instead of just reading the news. So you'll be able to create short posts and share links and other types of media like videos and podcasts and things like that. And it's interesting because, again, this is something that is kind of a bit of a turn, a little bit of a pivot in what Flipboard is really known for, which is just reading the news. But, you know, I do think it's an interesting change at a time like this when, you know, there's a lot of interest in possibly pivoting away from Twitter.
Are barcodes going to go away?
So maybe for Amazon, the company is looking into new technology in its warehouses that would allow computer systems to kind of scan products in the warehouse and match them to an image so that they can get orders out much more quickly without having to have a human actually grab an object and look for the barcode and scan it. So this is something that Amazon is testing right now, but it is something that it believes can help kind of speed up the process of getting orders out there and, most importantly, getting orders to the right place as well.
Hmm. So robots aren't good at reading. It seems to me like that's technology to technology. That would be a perfect match. But as automated as their system is, they think barcodes don't help, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So it's funny that you mentioned that because I do think, you know, based on what Amazon has said about this system that it's testing, it would kind of work in conjunction with robots. But robots, you know, the problem is that it can be hard to find the barcode sometimes. And I think anyone who's had experience, you know, as a cashier probably can relate. Sometimes you just don't know where it is. Maybe part of it is obscured or maybe it's missing the barcode. And all of those things kind of slow the process down.
Well, there I was at the Whole Foods the other day trying to get the tiny barcode on an Apple sticker through the baggie that I was holding it in to read because I didn't want to enter the code or look it up by name. And I thought, I know this can be done. And about a minute later, I thought, oh, hell, I just took the Apple out and then weighed the dang thing. So I suppose if I couldn't do it as a human with eyes and logic, maybe a machine couldn't do it either. That's an interesting point.
Exactly.
Let's visit another day. Lisa Edichico from CNET. Thanks for helping us out today.
Of course. Thanks again for having me.
Dictionary.com said that woman was the word of the year. Different dictionaries get to have their own words. You've heard that gaslit or gaslighting is one of the words that people say is the word that defined 2022. But Dictionary.com said woman, and they said one of the words or phrases they were considering was quiet quitting, which is a concept that we really hadn't heard about or thought much about until maybe this year. Matt Schultz is the chief credit analyst at LendingTree.com. And I want to start our conversation with that because you all are writing a little bit about that this week, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah, it's become such a phenomenon and such a thing that people are talking about, and it's as you said, it's not really necessarily a new thing. It's something that we seem like we've sort of defined this year, and we did a survey showing that about a third of workers say that they are consciously doing this, and we defined quiet quitting, by the way, as mentally checking out from work or not accepting additional work in your role without additional pay.
Oh, that's interesting. The second part of that, I thought part of the definition would be, or just not doing your work. You're working from home, and 3 of the 5 days, you know, you're at the club or grocery shopping and monitoring things. I don't know how long you get away with that, but it would be doing the minimal, the least amount of work you can do and still get away with it. Does that fall into your definition as well?
Yeah, I think that goes along with kind of the mentally checking out from work thing, and I do think that it's something that now that so many people are working at home or in a hybrid way, home and office, it's something that businesses have to wrestle with. But it's also something that this time of year, when so many people are taking time off or trying to take time off, that it can become an issue as well.
Why is that?
Well, simply because if you have holiday vacation time set up, and your bosses keep pushing you to attend meetings and do a little bit of work here and there, it's important for you to set those boundaries. And that could be viewed to a degree as a bit of a quiet quit thing, but it's actually a really healthy thing to do.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it would seem to me as though I ought to be able, well, you've got a job, you've got to do your job, if it's the holidays or not. But I guess if you say, listen, I can't take work home, or I'm not going to answer email after 10 p.m., that's not quiet quitting to me. I think you and I are on the same page on that, aren't we, Matt?
Yeah, yeah. And those sort of boundaries do matter. And if you are working at some place where they consistently have you, where they consistently eat into time that you're supposed to be off, or they're consistently asking you to do things that are beyond your job description or that you probably should get paid extra for, then it's something that you need to think about.
But this is a sort of looking at quiet quitting from the other side. I mean, you're making it sound as a reasonable option for employees to exercise. And I think generally we're looking at it as slackers who are just going to coast until they get caught.
Yeah, there's no question that there is some of that. And we actually saw in our survey, people were more likely to view quiet quitting as a negative thing than as a positive thing. It wasn't like a huge spread, but it was definitely viewed more negatively than positively. And again, it's understandable because you do have the idea that these folks are kind of slacking off. But then there's also looking at why people are quiet quitting, and some of it is that they're not being treated that well at their job, and it's a kind of passive-aggressive reaction to that.
Well, then we need another phrase for it, because to me, quitting is quitting, quietly or otherwise. If you're still on the payroll, then you're cheating, stealing, or you're making my life more difficult. You can tell I don't have a lot of sympathy for quiet quitters, but if, but if what you're saying is I'm being treated unfairly and my employer is a lout, then we need another phrase for that, because quiet quitting, to me, just makes everybody else's job more difficult.
And the one of the worst things about it is the passive aggressiveness of it. If you're having these issues, instead of quiet quitting and kind of checking out, you need to take some sort of action, whether you're talking to your supervisor or whether you're talking to a headhunter and looking for someplace else to be.
I want to read from LendingTree.com. This is Matt Schultz, chief credit analyst there. The quiet quitting movement is popular with a significant portion of the American workforce. 3 in 10 workers consciously participate in quiet quitting. 30% young workers are most likely to participate. It's like it's a club. It's not. Don't say participate. Say not do their job. I'll continue. I'm a boomer. Young workers are most likely to participate, with 40% of Gen Zers ages 18 to 25 identifying as quiet quitters. That's followed by millennials, 33%, Gen Xers, 24%, baby boomers, 17% of them are more inclined to say that they quietly quit. And by the way, that may be delusional. Maybe some of those older folks say, I'm not a quiet quitter. And the younger people would look at them and they would say, you've been quiet quitting for 20 years now, Bob. So maybe there's a little bit of that.
Yeah, there certainly could be some of that as well. And it is interesting to see how distinctly it falls along age group lines, where it is so much more common when it comes to younger folks. And I don't think that it's something that's going away anytime soon either.
It's a changing marketplace. The younger people, new to the workforce, do have more leverage than historically that age group ever has, or at least that has been the case the last year or so. You can read more about this at LendingTree.com. 57% of quiet quitters say their work-life balance has improved. Well, I suppose it has. What with there being less work and all? That's Matt Schultz at LendingTree.com. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
I think that interview was more about me than Matt. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, more business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The latest earnings report shows the depths of the financial turmoil at grilling company Weber. The Palatine-based company lost $330 million for the fiscal year that ended September 30th. The company's net sales were down 20% year over year. Weber had strong sales during the pandemic when people were stuck at home and they stepped up their grilling activity. But sales began declining when pandemic restrictions were loosened. The company's also struggled with supply chain issues and inflation. Earlier this week, it was announced Weber would be taken private in a deal valued at $3.7 billion with BDT Capital Partners. Chicago-based McDonald's says it has a deal to purchase solar energy that will power all of the warehouses and distribution centers it uses for supply and logistics for its U.S. restaurants. The company and five of its logistics partners have signed agreements for power from the Blue Jay Solar Farm near Houston. McDonald's is trying to cut greenhouse emissions by 36% by 2030 and become net zero by 2050. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Yep, and I have a story about a Chicago chef who can't open his mouth and is just lucky to be alive. After I tell you, we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Jose Duran was experiencing his life as a 28-year-old chef at a Michelin-starred Wicker Park restaurant should. Everything was going well until November 29th. He had just gotten off work around 9 p.m. and was going home.
He catches the blue line there at Division. He was just waiting for his train, and somebody came up behind him while he was, you know, had his headphones in and just pushed him on the tracks.
That is Caleb Trahan, the chef de cuisine at the restaurant Schwa.
He landed directly on his face, and then there were some people that jumped in to help him off the tracks as the train was coming in.
And people are still jumping in to help Jose because it's hard to be a chef when your jaw is wired shut and your vision's impaired. Doctors had to insert a plate behind his eye. He's had multiple surgeries to his face and head. So Chicago's restaurant community is coming together to help.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. A lot of people have called the restaurant, have reached out via email, all kinds of things like that to show their support.
Many of the vendors, suppliers, and others working with Schwa have all kinds of ideas on how to raise money for Jose, and a childhood friend, Daniel Garcia, started a GoFundMe to help pay Jose's medical bills and living expenses until he's able to go back to work at Schwa, which may be a while.
I mean, he's ready mentally. He wants to get back to work, but I think it's they have another almost 2 weeks before they check out what's going on with the wired jaw.
Trahan says Jose Duran, despite his injuries, has the same infectious positive attitude that endeared him to his coworkers and diners at Schwa, where he was part of a unique dining experience.
We don't have any front-of-the-house service staff. All the chefs involved here take part in serving the food, explaining dishes, water service, clearing tables, all those things.
And Jose Duran will be back at it as soon as his body allows. From the farm to your belly, today's National Gingerbread Latte Day and National Cupcake Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Your hometown. Today we stay in Chicago and visit Bronzeville, an historic Black American business, arts, and cultural epicenter. Stay with us all day as we explore Bronzeville. Sponsored by Illinois Lottery. Anything is possible in your hometown.
Also sponsored by our friends at McDonald's, the Black metropolis that is Bronzeville features an iconic ice cream shop called Sean Michelle's. And Nataki and Yahya Mohammed are the co-owners of the place that is famous for unique flavors, including vanilla. And Nataki, this is John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good, John. Wait a minute. When you say vanilla, wait. We have to put something in front of that. It's grandma's old-fashioned homemade vanilla. So we have to, it's nothing simple. It's amazing.
Well, it's funny because I mentioned that because I've read that you guys are really proud of your vanilla ice cream. And I thought, how can you be proud of vanilla ice cream? This would be a different taste sensation than normal vanilla?
Oh, my God. I wish I could explain it to you over the phone, but absolutely. I tell the story a lot, and we've had customers literally come into the shop, taste our vanilla ice cream, and have tears come in their eyes.
And, know.
I know it's funny.
You're just making that up.
Funny.
You're just saying that.
I promise you. I promise you. And let me tell you why. So what happens is, so our ice cream is really homemade ice cream. And when people taste it, it takes them, as my husband would say, back down memory lane. And so it may have been a grandmother, it may have been a mother, it may have been an aunt or a loved one that actually made homemade ice cream for them. And so when they taste that flavor, it takes them back. So I promise, you know, fingers up to God, it is true.
I do believe you. I mean, that's what everybody says. And I've read the different flavors. I want to talk about them, too. I think Yaya's on the phone line, too. Are you there, Yaya?
Let's see. He was doing multitasking, so hopefully he'll join us.
Well, we just have a few minutes. Let's you and I keep talking, Nataki.
Sure.
It's named Sean Michelle, which is Yaya's sister, who died tragically in a car crash. He had been selling the ice cream out of his own car. He was churning it by hand at Western Illinois University. He became known for his delicious ice cream. His sister, Sean, encouraged him to go into business, Sean Michelle.
Yeah.
And he sort of took a pass for a while after she passed, but now the business is named in her honor, and they say that her spirit still informs Sean Michelle's ice cream, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Every time you have Sean Michelle's or you say Sean Michelle, it is, you know, just a memory of Sean. She was an amazing baker. My mother-in-law, you know, my husband's family, they're culinary people and they do a fantastic job. And Sean was very encouraging to my husband. You know, she was the one that said, either you're going to do ice cream or you're going to do ice cream. And so he stepped out on faith and did it. And our first shop.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you've had a few locations. You're in Bronzeville now, but you're also in Olympia Fields too, right?
Yeah. Yes, we are. We love Olympia Fields. They have welcomed us warmly. And the cool thing about Olympia Fields is we have a drive-through as well. You know, if you don't want to get out your car and you want to just take a trip out to Olympia Fields, you can just come through the drive-thru and get your ice cream. And wait a minute, your peach cobbler, your pound cake, your caramel rum pound cake, and all that good stuff.
Are those flavors or are those other items on the side?
Those are actually baked goods. I'm sorry, I should have said that. The peach cobbler is actually homemade peach cobbler.
Oh, wow.
The pound cake is a homemade pound cake, although we can mix our vanilla and lemon ice cream and call that our lemon pound cake. And then we also have a caramel rum pound cake, actual dessert baked good.
I figured you'd have a caramel. I have time for one more flavor I wanted you to comment on.
Sure.
Melanin.
Melanin Magic. That's our chocolate. That is our amazing chocolate ice cream. We wanted to give it a really fun, colorful name and something that, you know, really represented chocolate. So we called it Melanin Magic.
I thought you were going to weave some melanin in there and it would be a sleep aid. It'd be a great way to, you know, have dessert after dinner and then go to sleep.
Well, that happens too, John. You know that.
Well,
that
you do.
That absolutely happens.
You do a nice job of selling your product there. And I suppose you have plans to expand again. Are you going to come further north or are you going to stay in the south suburbs and south side?
That is to be seen. We are eventually going to expand. I'm not sure if we're going to expand more in Chicago. But it's a possibility. We were downtown. Well, we were in the West Loop in the Fulton Market, but that was just a one-year thing. So it's a possibility. We'll see.
Nataki and Yaya Muhammad, the ice cream shop is called Sean Michelle's. You'll find it at 47th and Wabash, right? And then in Olympia Fields as well. One of the things that makes Bronzeville that much more flavorful, colorful, and tasty these days. It's nice to talk to you today, Nataki. Continued success.
Beautiful. Thank you, John. I appreciate it. Thank you from Yaya and I and our whole Sean Michelle's team. We appreciate the time.
You know, the good thing about this show, I think, is it can be funny on two levels, the intended and the unintended. So there I was just doing a radio show talking to the folks from Sean Michelle's Ice Cream Shop. Nataki Muhammad and her husband Yaya, and they run this Southside ice cream shop. And one of the flavors they're famous for is Melanin Magic. And I said, well, that would be a good flavor because then it would help you sleep at night after you have your ice cream for dessert. She was too kind to tell me that I was mistaking melanin for melatonin. 708, however, texted in to say, John, melanin is the substance that gives our skin its color. The more melanin, the darker you are. So a chocolate ice cream named Melanin Magic would make sense. John, you are thinking of melatonin, LOL. Well, I knew that. I was just saying that kind of as a double entendre wink at everybody. Right?